You're listening to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast with Mike Chappell and Dave Griffiths.
Inside the Fox 59 CBS4 podcast studio, welcome to the Colts Blue Zone Podcast. Alongside Mike Chappell, I'm Dave Griffiths. So glad to have you along. No Matt this week. I missed last week because I was in Minneapolis with Purdue.
I don't miss.
Chappell never misses. This is his his bread and butter right here, the Colts Blue Zone.
Because I have no life, so this is what I point towards.
As long as traffic on 465 is not too backed up, or 65, Chapp will be here. And as long as the hamster down in Beech Grove is running, that internet will keep going. And he'll keep churning out content for us online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com as well. So we're glad to have you here as we are a week into official free agency beginning. I know Matt and Chapp had a big, long explanation of what had happened so far, and that had come just the day after the Colts had reintroduced a bunch of their signings. Headlined by Michael Pittman Jr., Kenny Moore, Grover Stewart, guys getting big deals done. Zaire Franklin as well,
extension.
Of course. Yeah, I can't forget Zaire. My goodness. What am I thinking?
Sure,
terrible. It's out of your mouth, not mine. Now, I still get another to mention sometime later on this show. But we are just about 1 month away from the NFL draft right now. So now that free agency is a little bit more concrete, you'll see mock drafts around the country start to be a little bit more precision oriented, I think, since some teams are filling options or filling holes that were not filled before. Like the Atlanta Falcons aren't going to draft a quarterback now, you don't think? They're not going to trade up for one because, well, they got their quarterback. But
that's a great example of what we always talk about, getting things done long term in the NFL.
Yeah.
Cousins is a perfect example that maybe long-term is like 4 years. Because what is he, 30? He's got to be 30, 39.
He's up there. He's in his high 30s.
So they don't have their long-term guy, but for 3 or 4 years they do. And if you're the Falcons, that may be what you're looking at. It's not like you're going to get Caleb Williams where long-term is 10 more years. So it just depends on where you are with your roster building.
And so we'll discuss plenty when it comes to the Colts and their latest free agency moves, kind of the more ancillary ones after they got.
Well, except if I'm not mistaken, when we talked on Thursday with me and Matt, I don't believe had they had Flacco then.
Did they not have Flacco?
I don't think
yet?
They had
okay.
Flacco. I thought that was Friday.
Yeah, that might have been.
I might be wrong.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, we can get into Flacco for
and
sure.
That's a key signing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And so we'll talk Flacco. We'll talk other ancillary signings. But we'll begin with some just news and notes from around the league before we get into the drama of this week in Colts free agency land, which you got to love the drama. But we'll talk about that. But so just some other bigger signings. A couple wide receivers locking up big deals. Ex-Chargers receiver Mike Williams has a one-year, $15 million max deal from the Jets. So sending him over to pair with Garrett Wilson and give Aaron Rodgers someone to throw to there. 29 years old, tore his ACL in week 3 last year, but he still had a couple good years there with the Chargers. And I bring this up, I'll say the Chargers are doing like the exact opposite, Chap, of what every other team is doing with their young quarterback. Instead of
tearing it down.
Exactly. Like instead of signing weapons, they're saying, nah, you guys could leave. But like I understand where they're coming from, especially with Williams, because his cap hit was like $32 million.
He had like four guys at $150 million.
Ludicrous numbers. And you can't afford that, even if one of them's not your quarterback. But Williams is to the Jets. The Browns have extended Jerry Jeudy 3 years, $58 million. They had just
That's a big contract for him.
Exactly. He hasn't done that much.
He's
league.
That guy that gets 800 or 900 yards, 600 yards. I think he had 1,000 yard season, similar to Christian Kirk.
Yep,
maybe.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know who's going to throw to him in Denver for that matter, but nevertheless, he was with the Browns. He was with Denver. That's my fault. He's with the Browns. So he pairs with his former Alabama, another Alabama receiver, in Amari Cooper over there. Jimmy Garoppolo talked about his 2-game suspension here to start off 2024. He said that he messed up a therapeutic use exception from the NFL when he first got to Las Vegas. So that is why the Rams will be without their backup quarterback for the first 2 weeks of the season. Always got to get the I's dotted, the T's crossed. Of course, the Colts had some of those issues with the PED policy last year, Chap. And even when you know the drill, apparently, sometimes it's hard for the players to follow the exact letter of the law.
With Garoppolo, it's like it's always something.
It is. It seems like
you think, goodness gracious, it's a lot of times it's an injury. This, that, and the other. You can't keep track of an injury. But, yeah, this then the suspension. So, yeah. And, again, but with therapeutic exemptions and all this, I would try to cut, like, Grover Stewart a break because of what we know of him and how he's been. But there's no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's we've talked about this. If you're going to take something that's new or whatever, all the information is out there. You just dial up something on the NFLPA website and it tells you 50 or 60 things that you cannot take. If you have a question, you call your team doctor. So yeah, all the excuses and rationales are weak when these players mention it.
Saints defensive end Chase Young just signed this free agency period. He's going to have neck surgery, chap, before next season. Has signed a one-year, $13 million max deal there with the with New Orleans. They say that he'll be back in September. They claim. We'll see about that. But neck surgery, like whenever you hear neck surgery, and again, of course, Colts fans go back to the Manning days and how his tenure here ended, but you hear those two words back to back, it just scares the heck out of you, especially for a defensive end who's slamming his head into an offensive tackle 60 times a game. So
did they not do the physicals before he signed?
Allegedly, they knew already, but they were willing
That's crazy.
$13 million on him. That's what I read.
Somewhere. I don't know what is guaranteed and what he gets if this is career-ending neck surgery. But if you've been around the league long enough, teams can sign or can pass anybody for the most part on a physical, regardless of what their issue is,
mm-hmm.
as long as they can walk into the room if you really want the guy. But that it's just a strange twist. And this is another player with immense upside that, what was it, an ACL?
It was a couple, and then I think it was a patella too. I think he had two injuries.
The first one was in his second year. I think he played as a rookie.
Correct.
So it's just, you just hate to see this, but so many times careers never either take off or reach where they should because of these injuries.
Remember last year at this time, chap, when we were counting down the days to specific pro days, and whether it was Anthony Richardson's pro day, or it was Bryce Young's pro day, or it was Will Levis's pro day, or CJ Stroud's pro day.
No, we don't care.
Exactly. We don't care anymore. But as I was looking around, Caleb Williams is going to start his pro day about 1 hour from when we are recording this right now. So if you are listening Wednesday afternoon, maybe you can turn on NFL Network Plus, and find the end of his pro day right now. But I saw that and I chuckled. I was like, good times.
I've not been to a lot of pro days. Went to Notre Dame's once. I went to Stanford in March or early April in 2012 for Andrew Luck's pro day.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing pro day. Yeah. I mean, it was kind of blustery and it was chilly and he was everybody was there. You know, the Colts had a zillion guys there. And what was cool, I don't know if all these pro days worked this way, but after it was over, they took four or five of us from Indy who were there, and we had 10 minutes with him, which was really neat, where you get a sort of start a connection with him. But other than that, I saw is Ohio State's pro day today?
I'm not sure, it might be.
And Marvin Jr. is not participating, which is really, he is setting something of a precedent by doing virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did physicals in Indy, but he's saying, you've got my tape.
He's saying, I'm done. I'm done with this.
Right. So, and it's funny, we've talked about this. Somebody asked Chris Ballard, is this setting a bad precedent? He said, it's Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, if you have leverage, use it. And if you don't think you do. But when you have leverage, Eli Manning and all this,
right?
Use it when you can.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why, I mean, I've heard, I don't know if there's been any serious reporting to the speculation that Caleb Williams doesn't want to play in Chicago. But like that's what I went back to, the Eli Manning situation and Philip Rivers. And it seemed to work out pretty well for both of those franchises eventually. But yeah, if you have leverage, definitely use it. I will be pro player almost every time. It might be 999 times out of 1,000, but like I can't think of any obvious examples when like I don't say, hey, you have a little bit of advantage here against your employer.
Teams always have leverage.
Exactly, especially in the NFL.
You see these big contracts, 4 years, $100 million.
Go for it. Do it. Come on.
Because they'll cut you after 2 years, and you're still owed $45 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I applaud players, but be smart enough to know whether you actually have leverage.
Anthony Richardson should have plenty of leverage when his contract comes up in a couple of years, but fortunately the Colts have to worry about
that.
Can you
imagine the number it's going to be?
Good one.
If he is the real deal, what the numbers will be.
Didn't Jim Irsay say billion-dollar player eventually, something like that, during one of his press conferences?
The number, there's a ceiling, but probably
is
not.
That? But
I don't know.
Uh-huh. Anthony Richardson, just this week, you can read the story online, Fox59.com, CBS4.com. It is, of him pulling over to help a stranded driver on I-65. Drove to help him get some tools for his car. It's a good story. Like I said, you should head out there and check it out just to get a glimpse inside the head of Anthony Richardson there.
Well, it was funny because again, these are things that, unless it hits social media, you don't know about.
Of course.
And he didn't stop thinking, I bet they take a picture and they get up. That's not what most of these guys do. I did chuckle, though, where the guy had a flat tire.
Right? Yes.
And he handed him $200 and said, get you some more tires.
Like one tire.
Get you a tire. but that's not.
Still nice. Still helps.
That's not to throw shade at all. Because
no.
How many times do people just drive by? And especially if you are somebody, you just drive by, you've got your own stuff going on. It just gives you a glimpse into who he is, that he took time seeing somebody in distress. So, it's the latest little nugget about him that makes you – and we've had some good sit-downs with him where you look into who he is, and this is another example of who he is.
This week is also the start of the NFL owners' meetings this Sunday. So just a couple days away, all the NFL owners will gather in, is it Florida, Chap?
Orlando,
Florida, starting on Sunday. And this could be a time where they discuss rule changes, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Yes, for the NFL. And, of course, it's a time you look back a year ago or maybe 2 years ago. I think it was just 1 year ago where the Daniel Snyder and Washington football team was all – that was kind of the one of the bigger stories, and Jim Irsay made himself very vocal, kind of one of the face of the league, sort of in those meetings, to be able to speak with reporters about how the league was handling that situation. But our speculation, at least right now, is that Jim Irsay will not be at those owners' meetings this year.
I was told to be determined.
Okay,
I talked to him about 2 weeks ago, and people have to understand what the league means to Jim Irsay. I mean, it means it's right below family Colts. It may be not. I was going to say family Colts league. It might be family league and Colts. That's how much he believes in the league. And if he cannot be there, it'll crush him. He just mentioned that he was still in the hospital at the time, about to be discharged. What he told me. And I said, you think you'll be at the league meetings? And he said, if so, it would probably be against my doctor's orders. And he said, now I've really got to take care of, what they say. So we'll see. And that's important locally, because whenever he's there, he always holds court with the four or five local guys that go there, Stephen Holder and Joel Erickson and Nate Atkins and James Boyd. I don't think I'll make it this year. But he always gives time. And I've always said in the hierarchy of access, league access by like beat writers and guys that cover teams, owners' meetings is number one. You've got an hour one day to talk with Steichen and all the coaches. You'll have access to Chris Ballard and again with Jim Irsay. So it's really, really important to do. Normally, hard news doesn't come out of this, but Jim Irsay, you never know because, he tends to do things. But the background and your give and take with the head coach and the GM are just critical. And that's, I've always said, if newspapers and TV stations prioritize, owners' meetings are number one.
So we'll see what comes out of that. That'll be next week. So it'll be this topic of discussion for us next week on the podcast here. But this week we will focus, of course, primarily on free agency and the continuing movements for the Colts and maybe some other teams as well, depending on time. But we will begin, as I said, with the drama of this week in free agency. And boy, was there drama. You gotta love a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of give, a little bit of take. A little bit of bad information.
Was that Saturday or Saturday? I think it was coming out Saturday.
Yes. Sorry about this, chap. But allegedly, the Colts had some interest in at least LeJarius Sneed, cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, we talked about this before on the podcast. We talked about Sneed's situation. He's been franchise tagged by the Chiefs, so he would be, if he signs the contract, under contract to play there for 1 year, $19 million. But the Chiefs have given him permission to go and seek a trade. And so Sneed is out there looking for a team that would sign him to a longer-term deal, whether that's 3 years, 4 years, 12 years. That wouldn't happen, but you know what I mean. They need to come to an agreement on a deal for Sneed, and then a team would have to come to an agreement with the Chiefs on compensation, whether that's a second-round pick, whether that's a third and fourth, whether that's whatever it is. Whatever you need
it,
to come.
It won't be two first rounds. That's why you do a sign and trade. You're getting rid of that onerous compensation of the franchise
tag. For the franchise tag. Correct. So the drama is, word came out via someone.
A Colt blogger slash insider.
Let's go with that. A blogger slash alleged insider who said that the deal was basically done. And the Athletic's Diane Rossini herself said the Titans and Colts were both really close to getting deals done for Sneed.
Close is a relative term.
Close is a relative term. And, chap, like you said, this kind of threw your Saturday into an upheaval, and the same thing for a bunch of other Colts reporters. But nothing has happened since then.
It messed up the day until we reached out and talked with sources that we trust that said, no, those are bad rumors, bad speculation. And I tweeted this, or X'd it, whatever you want to say. I have criticized someone, blogger, insider, whatever you want to call them, who have posted something using their sources. If you trust your source, go with it. So whoever the person who posted it trusted it. He trusted it, and he went with it. And I trusted my source, who said, not really. But that people shouldn't read that in that the Colts had no interest. And we talked either last week or before we went on the air, they had a serious interest in Daniel Hunter. I mean, a serious interest.
Mm-hmm.
And it got he went to Houston for 2 years, $49 million, $48 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
And we were joking. That $1 million.
That's what would have broken the bank. Houston wouldn't have been able to do it.
Yeah, we can't go fully guaranteed.
But $48 million, that we
could
do.
Right, right. So they did that. They didn't do that, but they looked into it. And I have no doubt that they've had or have more than passing interest in LeJarius Sneed. And again, we'll go down a small rabbit hole. When you hear that teams have interest, just be careful how it's worded. I'm sure that the Chiefs, in some form, have reached out to 31 teams to say, hey, what do you think? That doesn't mean 31 teams have an interest.
Right.
Or if the agent does that, it means that the player has, or the Chiefs has interest. But I do believe the Colts have had discussions. Maybe it went far down the road. I don't know. It certainly did. They didn't get there, or Sneed would be a Colt right now. So, and I've not closed the door on it happening. You know, if perhaps LeJarius Sneed comes down from whatever he's asking, and again, it's out there that he wants like $22 million. Says who? And I was told that, you know, the Colts could have done either one of these moves had they been all in, so to speak. And had they done that, those six players that Colts trotted out there last week, two or three of them wouldn't have trotted out there.
Right.
And you can pick which two or three, Grover Stewart or Kenny Moore or whomever. I mean, Zaire was under contract, and Pitt was not going anywhere. So one move impacts another. But again, obviously the door's closed on Daniel Hunter because he's in Houston. But I would not close the door on Sneed just because things change quickly. Compensation comes down, his asking price comes down. Does it get done maybe after the draft if they don't get a corner? Now, if they take a corner in round one at 15.
Then forget about it.
Then forget about it.
Need him to play at that point.
But then I still want a corner in my room that's not here who has played. You know, they still need a veteran corner, and they need a veteran safety, for crying out loud.
Here we sit.
Sign a safety that has played, you know, getting 1 year, $6 million, whatever. So, but yeah, it's just crazy how social media is really cool. It gets information out there quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it can get some bad information out there quickly. And once it's out there, somebody reports it, whomever, somebody reports it. And then the next guy says, well, it's been reported that. And then it takes on a life of its own. So just be careful who you listen to. And there's five or six guys on social media that when they say something, I trust them because they've been trustworthy. I mean, that sounds crazy. But just be careful who you listen to.
I typically know, at least for the guys in the Colts, on the Colts beat, who are there day after day, who, like, I look in the face and we chat about stuff before Shane Steichen comes out and talks to us. I generally know who their sources are.
Right.
And so that helps me trust them too. For the guys I don't know who their sources are. So, and that makes me hem and haw a little bit more about, is this really accurate? And sometimes it comes out to be true. Sometimes it turns out to be not true. So in our business, being right is the most important thing. Like, it's not being first.
I was
being
wrong first.
Exactly. Congratulations. It's being right. Good for you. So this is not a podcast on journalism or any of that, or I would go into a much deeper rabbit hole because it's something that I genuinely care about. But I will say that there can be different interpretations of what sources tell you to, and must be responsible with how you report it. If you say, oh, they're close to getting a deal done, or are they close to getting a deal done with Snead? Are they close to getting a deal done with the Chiefs? Is it just one or the other? Because if it's only one,
it takes three parties.
It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. And then if you go out and report that, hey, a deal's close to being done, that's not true. So that's all I'll add to the discussion. That I think there was maybe some good information that was sent out to multiple people, and that people reported it in a misrepresenting the actual reality of the situation.
What's that thing that you used to do in elementary school or whatever, where you told a story?
Whisper down the lane.
There you go. And whatever started out with the first person was mm-hmm. totally different.
Or telephone, whatever right. you call it. Yeah.
So, and again, and one thing I will say, and this isn't being defensive of the franchise. I've been around franchises, Colts, where they had more leaks than a 50-year-old boat. I really think Chris Ballard has done as much as he can to plug leaks. He goes off when maybe someone tries to get some confirmation. And most of the things that are reported are agents. These signings are agents. You know, the agent has five or six guys on his group text, and it's crazy. As soon as one guy has something, three other guys have it. And
right.
they get virtually the same text.
Yeah, it's like a copy and paste.
At least
and even on the big national stuff, you see Schefter and Rappaport, everybody tweet out the same thing at the same time.
The But I really think the Colts have tried to keep things in-house. Now, it's difficult when you have an owner like Jim Irsay, who occasionally puts things out there.
And he says what he wants when he wants.
And it's his team. And that's the
long and the short of it.
And when you're the owner, you can, rules don't apply to you.
Nope.
So, but just all I'm saying is be careful who you listen to and be a little skeptical if it's somebody that you're not familiar with, and that's not to bang our horns at all or bang our drums at all.
So let's get into the free agency moves that are actually happening, the players who are going to be Indianapolis Colts. We will start with Joe Flacco. I didn't put that on the list because I thought that you guys might have touched on it last week,
maybe,
and I forgot about that.
My head's foggy.
But anyway, it's a one-year deal worth $8.7 million. And he's very much not. This story was published on Wednesday of last week, and you guys.
Okay, then we
don't need to get into it too much. I will say that he's just about as opposite of a type of quarterback as you can get from Anthony Richardson. You would think he's old and slow instead of young and athletic, but at the same time he's been around the block. He's been he had a postseason for the ages for the Ravens. I don't know, a decade
the last
ago now.
Month.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It was
come back later the year, and if somebody said he beat out a dead guy.
Yeah,
As bad as that sounds.
Uh-huh. It's not wrong. And
he
so,
beat out a guy who died.
Right, right. We'll leave it at that. And I'm eager to talk to him. University of Delaware. Let's go, Blue Hens. Joe Flacco coming to town to back up Anthony Richardson.
I think he's 39.
He is.
I think he's a year older than Shane Steichen.
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Yes. He's my age now, so
yeah,
39 years old.
He's the age I used to be, you know, a half a lifetime ago. Uh-huh. But this is what you want. And we did, now my mind's turned. We talked about all this, but we had talked to Shane Steichen and Ballard that, do you want a guy closer to Richardson's skill set? And they said, ideally, yes, but they wanted a guy who if the time comes, you can win with him. Gardner Minshew. Gardner Minshew wasn't a clone of Anthony Richardson at all. So if the worst case happens, Flacco comes in and can play, and he can carry you for a while, and that's what you want in a veteran quarterback.
100%.
Veteran backup.
Yes, and he proved last year that he can carry a team a little bit, and he more than a little bit if called on.
But I also think that we saw that the longer he played, at some point, it was going to not be as effective as early. But that's the case with all backup. That's why Minshew really went against the odds, because the problem with Minshew was too often we saw his ceiling, which is not high enough. But where would they have been without Minshew?
Not 9-8.
5-12?
Maybe.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
So they were going to bring in a backup quarterback. They did. And now they need to get Richardson back to where they think he can be and will be.
Other players they have signed since that last podcast a week ago Thursday, the Colts re-signed safety/linebacker Ronnie Harrison Jr. In 7 games for the Colts last year, he made 3 starts, 19 tackles, 1 sack, 2 interceptions, one of them a pick 6. So the biggest question that I have for him is he going to be a linebacker or a safety next year? I think
yes.
You want him to be. Yeah, I know. I think like with it right now and them not
now
having
a safety.
Safeties exactly because by process of elimination. So I think that'll be I'm eager to find out what the plan is with Ronnie, because could he be both? Yes, he's a little light right now to be a linebacker. He's probably in the 210 range. You'd rather have him be 220. I mean, Shaq played pretty light when he was here, and he was pretty darn good, but there aren't too many players like Shaq Leonard in his prime. So will Ronnie be a safety? Will he be a linebacker? We'll find out.
But you need those guys that can do that.
You do.
He
just talked about position flexibility a lot.
He can't be one of your top 3 at the position.
No.
But to have guys, they talk about in the offensive line all the time. This guy can play 3 spots. Well, that's what you need. And
the old Joe Wrights.
Right.
Yes.
Right. He may have had a pretty doggone good career being the guy that you didn't want to start, but you always end up starting.
But you didn't want him off your roster either.
Right. And so many, we'll go down this list, but mm-hmm. So many on social media, they say, what are you bringing these guys back for? They're 1 year, virtually minimum contracts with not a lot of guarantees. So just ease up. It's March and it's not a big deal.
These contracts do not move the needle.
No, like a bit.
Yeah, not in the slightest. The ones that move the needle are the big ones that you guys talked about last week. The Kenny Moore for $30 million, the Zaire for $30 million. Michael Pittman Jr. for $70 million.
Grover for $39 million.
I was stunned to see $39 million.
Yeah, you trashed him for a month.
Now hold on. One cotton picking men for crying out loud here.
Okay, I exaggerated.
Yes, thank you. Oh, here's
a
what. Yeah, here's what I said. Right on Grover. I said, do not be surprised if they go elsewhere. And as you said earlier on this podcast, if they had agreed to a deal,
he
could have been
one back.
That did not make it back, all right? They were looking elsewhere. It was very much a possibility. It was not set in stone.
You just can't take abuse without
no, I cannot.
Which is a good trait
right.
to have.
I will bow up, and I will make my case, dadgum. And I also said last week, or 2 weeks ago on the podcast, that you could make a strong case to bring Grover back. And Grover is coming back. He's solidifying the rush defense. They were infinitely better with him in the lineup than they were without him. So now teams can not as easily run the ball. They'll just throw it against your non-existent safeties right now. So,
and you got Raekwon Davis coming in, too, and he's 320 pounds, and he'll figure in that 3-man tackle rotation, which just makes it stronger.
Yes, absolutely. Colts have re-signed running back Trey Sermon as well, 14 games last year. Of course, mostly on special teams, but also saw some time in the backfield where he had 35 carries. for 160 yards, which is a 4.6-ish yards per carry average, and also had three receptions for 13 yards. Sermon, right now there is a hole in the backup running back chair, yes, behind Jonathan Taylor. So whether it's going to be Sermon or someone else, someone is going to kind of fill in. Zach Moss obviously was tremendous last year in his role. Even when Taylor came back, he had a role because he had a strong start to the year, and he was effective in that role. I think that they will probably try to leave Taylor in as often as possible because you paid him $14 million, and he's an electric player. But you're going to need someone else to come in and catch the ball, whether that's going to be Evan Hall or someone else, who knows. There could be someone.
We know nothing about Evan Hall.
No, absolutely nothing. And whether they're going to need someone to spell Taylor from time to time. Could that be Sermon? Could that be Goodson, Tyler Goodson?
JT's not going to play 17 games.
No.
More than likely.
Probably not.
Just because of the position, it's to a lesser extent about quarterback. And when that guy can't play, you need to have somebody to come in where, yes, there's going to be a drop-off, but you still need to be effective running the ball.
Right. And they found some effectiveness last year with, there was a kind of a platoon between Goodson and Sermon. And who knows what Evan Hall is going to be. Like you said, I'm intrigued to see Evan Hall.
Me too.
But, yeah, I think he could be fun. But yeah, there were a bunch of big running back contracts given up this last offseason because – apparently, a bunch of people don't like the running backs in the draft this year. So that's at least the word from NFL insiders out there who are trying to analyze what's going on here. So maybe Trey Sermon is the backup, and we'll see how he does. He was a former third-round pick. He's definitely got some talent. Showed so last year. So at least he's there in that room for now. The Colts also re-signed defensive tackle Taven Bryan, which was a bit of a surprise to me. I'll kind of explain a little bit, I think, why they did it. 17 games last year, 7 starts, only 22 tackles, only 2 sacks. Both of them came in the first 3 weeks of the season, by the way, and only 4 tackles for loss during his time in the lineup. Now, Taven Bryan is not going to be anything more than a backup and someone who comes in is part of that second unit defensive line.
His 7 starts were a reflection of Grover missing.
Correct.
6 games.
And in those games, I'll say this too, that's not really his position. And that's why, we've said on this podcast, we've talked about guys we want to bring or Colts maybe should bring back, and Taven Bryan has not been listed in any of them. I'll say this in Taven Bryan's defense, he's playing out of position where he's playing Grover Stewart's position. He's really more of a backup to the 3 technique, which is Buckner, not to the 1 or the nose tackle, which is Grover. So you have Raekwon Davis now, who's more of a legitimate backup to the nose tackle. Then you have Taven Bryan, who's in his more usual spot.
And you have Tyquan Lewis, who's wherever you want him to be.
You have Dio Odangbo, who can play on the inside. You really want to see a 4th-round pick last year? Adetanuwa, Adibare.
Right.
You need to make sure you can spell it.
A-A.
They would love to see him develop, I think, this year. And so I think that's a...
He was held back by lack of snaps,
yes,
opportunities for an obvious reason.
And I think that's going to be a real competition between Tommy and between Taven Bryan in this year's offseason and camp as to who's really on that second unit defensive line. And throw in Eric Johnson in there too, who's going into his 3rd year. I think he went to Missouri State. Is that right? And so all of those guys.
So they get 8 or 9 guys where you say, yeah, it's a pretty good group.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you want. You want a backup line that can come in and can eat up some snaps and can hopefully be a little disruptive.
And not again, have the big drop-off, which at times was the case last year. When this guy is out, don't have a big drop. Again, when Grover went out, we've talked about how ineffective the run game was. The run defense was, and that's what you want to try to, you want to have quality minutes from people coming in.
Yeah. Right now, if your second unit defensive line behind, well, your first unit is, of course, Quitty, DeForest, Grover, and Ebukam. Then if your second is Dio and Tyquan on the outside, and then Raekwon Davis and whoever it is, whether that's Taven Bryan or Adetanuwa or Eric Johnson on the second. Yeah, that's not bad. That's really not bad for an 8-deep, 9-10-deep players on your defensive line. It's not out of the question the Colts try to draft, I think, an edge in the first round if they find someone they really like. But it's definitely not a dearth of talent there.
One where if he's there, you think, my God, we didn't think he would be there.
Right.
An edge pass rusher.
Right.
So, that's like maybe...
If they have a top 10 grade on a Dallas Turner or a Jared Verse,
that's like 4th on my list unless that guy slips to you. You think, man, we had no idea he would be there.
It's kind of like the Malik Hooker situation years ago when they took him because they did not think he would be there. And he was productive when he was healthy for the Colts. Right. I'll say that. I miss Malik. I like Malik. I thought he was a good player.
Still playing pretty well.
Pretty darn well for the Cowboys, I believe it has been for the past couple years. So let's see. After Taven Bryan, the Colts also re-signed offensive lineman Danny Pinter, who you mentioned, fifth-round pick, Ball State. Chirp, chirp.
Chirp, chirp, bud.
2020 draft there. He has played in 46 games, has made 7 starts, and last year was just a lost year for Danny in his last year of his rookie deal. He broke his ankle in the 2023 preseason game in Philadelphia there. So Pinter is another one that, again, his contract doesn't move the needle, but he brings back starting experience on the offensive line.
If he's your eighth or ninth lineman,
I'd take that.
You're in pretty good shape.
Like he's seemingly, to my untrained eye as an offensive line expert over here on this side of the table in the Fox 59 studios here, he's looked better at center than he has at right guard to me, but the Colts were 3-0 when he started at center in the 2021 season,
right,
when Ryan Kelly was out for various reasons.
Right.
So I think the Colts should be very happy to have a guy who has started successfully on the offensive line as a backup and come back for a cheap contract. They're not happy that he broke his leg last year, but they should be happy that they can get him back at an affordable deal and he's not just completely green and a developmental piece completely that you're like, well, don't know what we're going to get from him. They have a good idea with what they're
going to get. Similar to Tyquan Lewis.
I think so, yeah. It's a good comparison.
Who for 2 years ended on IR with the patellas and they liked him. I mean, they liked Tyquan. I don't know if their affection is that high with Danny Pinter. But again, if he's at the tail end of your offensive line room, you're in pretty good shape.
The Bears signed defensive end Jake Martin. I think he was the last player, or the second to last player, who was a free agent for the Colts who went elsewhere. There is one final player.
Drum roll, please.
At the one position that you're like, well, who's going to play here? That I joked earlier with Ronnie Harrison. Well, he's a safety by default. It's safety Julian Blackman. Blackman has still not signed with anybody.
I think he visited Buffalo.
Yes, he visited Buffalo.
Without a contract.
Without a contract. So he left there. The Colts had a safety visit that was, I wrote it down
before corner.
I came. I thought he was a safety from Buffalo. Maybe he was a Mike Edwards.
Okay.
Also visited the Bills. So the Bills are bringing in a couple safeties because they cut both of their safeties last year, Poyer and Hyde. They're going completely different over there. They need to bring in other people. And the Colts do too. Julian Blackman still on the lam, so to speak. You look at what the Colts need, Chap, and they need a safety.
The worst room they have right now is safety.
You got to think so. I don't want that to be just a complete detraction of the safeties they have. Like they have guys that they are young that they like, but it's completely lacking in experience and especially proven experience back there. You have Rodney Thomas, who started his basically entire rookie year 2 years ago, and then last year it just seemed like they fell out of favor with him toward the end of the season.
He played his way out of the lineup.
Exactly. So once that happens, either you don't bet on players to completely get back in it. You know what I'm saying? That's not good general manager skills.
You're eagerly surprised if they do.
Right.
But you can't bank on
it. But you don't just sign nobody and say, oh, we think Rodney's going to hop right back and take 12 steps forward this offseason. Like, so it's puzzling that they haven't done anything with him yet. And I've had people tweet at me asking about Julian and like, oh, is he just going to come down from his sky-high asking price? Like, first of all, tap your brakes out there. I don't know what he's asking, first of all.
I was told he was asking top of the market money.
Blackman?
And whatever top of the market. The top of the market is like 16, 17 million, which is no. But 6 or 7 million, I think this is a case, maybe, where he goes out there and doesn't get the kind of interest, meaning money, that he had hoped for, and then he comes back here. 2 years, sort of a prove it deal. I don't know. With the Sneed thing, I'm not writing off Julian Blackman at all. It's just normally when a player hits the market, they just don't come back. That's just kind of how it is.
And again, back to our discussion earlier, I'm all for players getting all they can. So if he wants to stay out there for a while and get the best
longer
deal possible,
you're out there, the less money you're going to get.
That's true too. That's absolutely true. So that's just a to be determined right now with Julian Blackman with
good
some
player,
others.
Good player, when he's not healthy,
completely
really good player.
And what he has going for more than some of the other guys, like Justin Simmons, who's out there. Like Simmons is up either close to his 30s or 30. Julian Blackman is 25 years old.
Yep.
He is 25. He came to the Colts.
Led him in interceptions last year.
Yes, he did, at 21. Like, he was a young kid coming out of college and played here for a couple years. So he's still got a lot of tread on the tire.
I think this is one where maybe with a lot of these guys, but Blackman more than others, that Ballard said, this is our number, whatever it is. They had to offer him something because they value him. But
yeah.
And we're not moving from it. And if you know, if you come back for this number now, maybe the Colts number goes down because he didn't get what he wanted out there. But again, I think there's a chance he comes back. But the longer you're out there, the money dries up very quickly.
Mm-hmm. And that's just how it is because teams spend and spend and spend, and then
they
the
move
Colts,
on. They have to move on.
They have to get a plan for
right.
next year. Exactly. They can't say, "Oh, we'll wait for you, Julian."
Well, like we talked about, okay, we would really like to have had Hunter and Snead, but didn't get done, so we went to our guys.
Mm-hmm.
So you've always got to have a plan B. The good teams have plan Bs when plan A doesn't work.
So right now, the Colts' salary cap space, their effective cap space, according to Over the Cap, which means after 51 players signed and the projected rookie contracts, they have $18.2 million.
I've seen it just a tad higher. I've seen it around 22. I just checked. It was 22.
Okay.
Which is workable,
right?
But keep in mind, like $9 million of that goes towards the rookies,
right?
Your draft class,
right?
So, and you can do a lot with the cap.
Mm-hmm.
They could restructure guys. They could extend Buckner, which I wouldn't be shocked. They can cut a couple guys and get so they've got a lot of flexibility. But again, and as much as I say people can do what they want with the cap and make room and all this stuff, It still is a guideline and it's a budget that you try to stay in. The Colts generally don't redo contracts, not having played like Quentin or Ryan Kelly, where you restructure. You're not taking a pay cut. You're just moving money around. They're going to get the same money. Dallas did that with Dak Prescott. They restructured an unbelievably bad contract for the team.
Yes.
And it created $5 million of cap, which is a drop in the bucket. So they still have – the bottom line is they have flexibility to do Snead. They could get Snead done. It
would take a little work, but it's
yes,
possible
but
to
it's
do.
Possible because you'll if it's 4 years or whatever, 3 years, you can certainly make it work without crashing your budget, your cap budget.
With a guy like Snead or someone who could be a quote-unquote top dollar free agent still available, like, well, you could also give him $10 million this year and then – like $20 million next year.
You can do it. You can do it. I don't think they would front load it that weekly.
Right.
But,
I agree.
But you could do it. You could do it. And again, keep in mind that they do have the quarterback on a rookie deal, which makes a world of difference. So they basically have two quarterbacks on the roster. I forget about Sam. Probably $16 million total, which is a lot less than like Pittsburgh has.
Yeah, you just hope that in 3 or 4 years you're not in the Chargers' position of having four players for $150 million cap.
You have to plan ahead always.
good times. You guys had last week already that player availability with all the Colts who had come back. So another one had Raekwon Davis spoke with the Colts media this week over the weekend. He talked about why he came to Indy and all that. From his direct quote here, why coming to Indy, said, quote, "I just felt like this was the best choice for me. The organization, I feel like they opened their arms up and just let me in. They wanted me here. I feel like playing with Buckner and Grove, I feel like it's a great fit for me. And, you know, just learn a different scheme to be in something different," which I thought was interesting. They're not bringing him in to do what he did
in Miami,
which is probably good, because in Miami, he wasn't great. He did not meet his second-round draft grade expectation that he did in Miami. He played 63 games, 48 starts. He was a starter until this year, And he
played about half the snaps by and large over his career.
But in 63 games, made 129 tackles, so basically two tackles-ish a game, only had two sacks in his 63 games, only had five tackles for loss in his 63 games in four total years with the Dolphins. And his first year, his rookie year, was probably his best year out of all the four. They're bringing him in, Chris Ballard is, because they want him to change up. They want him to play in a different scheme because they think that his traits and his abilities can fit better in their scheme than it did in Miami. And this sometimes happens in the NFL. You draft someone and he doesn't fit in your scheme. I've talked about this many times on this podcast, that I always say Bjorn Werner was a horrible fit here in Indy, which is, of course, baffling that the Colts would take him in the first round and try to make him fit a round peg into a square hole, a 4-3 defensive end that they tried to make a 3-4 outside linebacker, and it never worked, and he got hurt, and then he was never the same player. And I know that he's when it comes to names that Colts fans cringe up at, like he's a step below Hank Baskett and Carson Wentz. Like, they do not like
you
hearing
mentioned his name.
I know. They do not like hearing Bjorn Werner's name either. But I'm telling you that he was a better player than he showed here, and his scheme fit was not good. Jerry Hughes is another perfect example. Perfect example. Did not work here and went elsewhere and turned into a really good player that earned multiple contracts down near the later years in his career. Maybe I'll use that example later just so we don't have people immediately popping off our podcast.
The Napoleons drafted
Jerry
Hughes, yes. And it didn't work here, 4-3-3-4. He goes to Buffalo and was pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm. And I'll explain a little bit with this next quote from Davis about kind of the difference of the schemes. Davis's comments on the scheme was, yeah, when Ballard called me, he was like, it's a different scheme. I feel it fits you. I thought to myself, yeah, man, let's switch it up. Let's see what this new scheme, what type of opportunity you can put me in. I was willing to do it. Ever since coming out of Alabama, I've been playing the same technique, two-gapping, just experiencing different techniques. That's all it is, man. Now, here's what two-gapping is. For those of you out there who don't understand, a two-gap defensive lineman is a lineman who attacks a blocker, and he is in charge of two gaps, the two gaps on either side of that blocker. Now, a one-gap technique is basically when what I kind of explained earlier, that DeForest Buckner is a three technique. That means he is responsible for the third position outside of center. So he tries to attack between the guard and the tackle. And I'm not going to break down everything.
Attack is the big word.
Yes, and you're right. Attack is the word. And they're trying to get Raekwon Davis to be more of an attacking defensive lineman on the interior rather than a guy who kind of eats up blockers and tries to react after that. They want him to react off the snap and go toward this gap, try to bust up a play in the backfield, as Grover has explained it, like about his relationship with the linebackers. We bust them up, you clean them up, right. And so that's what they want Raekwon Davis to do. And they're hopeful that he could take this opportunity and showcase more of his skills than he was able to in Miami.
And again, as much as we've criticized Chris Ballard, and rightly so, on I guess a blind spot on. Drafting edge rushers, there's three or four that just haven't worked out. They've been really good about finding defensive linemen at moderate prices in free agency. I mean, I think his first year he got Jamal Sherrod, Denico Autry, and they've had even Justin Houston, even Ngakoue, each one of those were like for 1 year that you got out of them. But they've done really, really well at moderate prices getting D linemen play well. Samson Ebukam had his best year last year,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't break the bank. So it's real. I say this every time. I'd still rather have that guy as my edge pass rusher instead of this by committee. But I like his track record of finding mid-level money-wise defensive linemen and those guys really thriving in this system.
Yeah, it seems like every year there's one mid-level guy somewhere. And defensive lineman, I think, is a good example. Like, I look back on the signings that, the Mike Mitchell signing was a big one that was really effective a couple years ago, too.
Rodney McLeod.
So a couple safeties in there as well. Which
I will go on record now as saying one of the starting safeties in September is not here, and he is a veteran guy. They'll sign to a 1 or 2 year deal. I'm confident of that.
I think they really want Nick Cross to develop into that guy, whether it's this offseason or next season so far. Because they traded up.
You still need three.
Exactly, you do. They traded up to draft him for a reason because they think he was a really good player, and that's their hope. And they took Rodney Thomas in the 7th round. I mean, they weren't expecting him, I don't think, to start year one, but he did. And then last year, second year, kind of, I think maybe hit a wall there in his development, which would show that he was a 7th round pick, you know. And I say that that comes with a little bit of a disparaging tone that I don't fully intend, because like I said, Zaire Franklin is a 7th round pick, and he developed into something a whole lot better than
in
that.
In his 3rd or 4th year.
Exactly. It took him some time to do so, and I think that's a great point. Like they never asked him to do what Rodney Thomas did in his first couple years. If Zaire was out there in his first 2 years,
he may not be here.
Exactly.
He still may not be here.
Might have been the same thing, same type of thing. You can't fully write the book on Rodney Thomas's future right now, just like you can't write the book on Nick Cross's full future right now. We're going to write another chapter to that this offseason and in training camp and next year. I think that will both of them in their 3rd years go a good long way to determine what their future is with the Colts. But it stays just the main, most intriguing position right now as we move forward, just because of the lack of proven starters that are out there right now. Like you said, probably a guy who's not here yet will be there on game one. I would have to agree with you on that. Whether it's a June signing or it's something that happens within the next month before the draft comes, I would if it is from the draft, I would be surprised, just because it's already so stinking.
You've already tried that. You've already tried, and it's not going to be an early draft pick on a safety.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I just we're all, you know, anxious, impatient, and I understand that, probably more so with the fan base than us, although, again, I wonder what the heck they're doing there. But if we're having this discussion after the draft, who are their safeties? Then I think they have a problem. Then they've waited too long, because the longer you wait, we're going to see some of these veteran safeties snatched up.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this last year. You're going to see somebody sign 1 year, $6 million. You can say, you guys weren't willing to pay that, considering your room. So, I've talked myself into being more patient in roster building. But the deeper you get into the offseason, and I just think you need a veteran safety prior to the draft, just so that's out of your head. If they take a safety in the 5th round, he's just the guy that's in the mix,
right?
Like you mentioned, so. Get that one. And if they sign a safety that's got some tread on him and is played, it'll quiet the fan base quite a bit.
And not
that that's a concern for Ballard.
And here's another thing about trying to sign a safety that I think that we should add to the discussion too. When we talked about the Colts' current salary cap space, that was, of course, before a potential Legarius Sneed deal. And you said it's still possible to work a Sneed deal in there with what they have. If the Colts are holding out any hope that is possible still. Like if they think that they're close with one side and then another side is not quite there in the deal, then signing a veteran safety after signing Sneed might be a bit more difficult. So you don't want to sign that veteran safety before you're fully closing the door on the Sneed deal. So I'll give Colts fans a little hope out there. As long as they don't sign a veteran safety, maybe Legarius Sneed can get that deal to happen.
Part of me wishes they would just sign a veteran corner.
Right.
Who started, you know, 20 games over the last 3 years, and you think, oh, maybe he's that veteran guy. Then that would snuff out Legarius Sneed talk. It just would. But there's still 3 or 4 areas, and we're going to get to the draft here before we're done. But just sign a veteran safety, then I'll feel better.
Yeah, and there's some guys out there that they're still free agents, but like you said, the money will dry up eventually here in free agency. Guys like at corner, Xavien Howard, Stephon Gilmore is still a free agent.
Would that be
there?
Cool to have him come back here? He was really good.
It was. I really like Gilmore quite a bit.
I like him in the locker room, too.
Uh-huh. Very helpful. Very soft-spoken. Like one of the most soft-spoken players that I've ever had.
He always had something to say.
He did, 100%. And which is, it's also very much opposite of your typical idea of what a shutdown corner in the NFL right. would be. A guy who's as...
Just carried the big sticks, all he did.
Very much so.
Won him two or three games.
Always, he certainly did, in a year where they didn't win all too many games. Steven Nelson is a player who I think is intriguing because he played with Chris Ballard in Kansas City for a couple years earlier in his career. That's possible. Adoree Jackson, Tre'Davious White had a couple really good years in Buffalo in terms of secondary guys there. There's a lot of players on this top list that I included here in our rundown that I think that there's no chance, of course, that they come to the Colts. But there's some wide receivers listed up here, some cornerbacks.
Need a better receiver.
Yeah, you think so? Because right now your receiver room, what? It's Pittman, it's Pierce, it's Josh Downs, or three. You're gonna get Ashton Doolin back, so there's four. Who do you throw in there other than those guys? Like, do you
first round pick?
Exactly. So, yeah, a veteran receiver is, I think, very much in the realm of possibility. I saw somebody post the other day something about like Jamal Agnew, the former Jaguars kick returner slash wide receiver, would be interesting. And I agree, that would be interesting.
You need a kick returner, too.
Exactly, because you need a kick returner. That's what Isaiah McKenzie was for you last year. And I think Agnew hurt his leg at the end of last year. I forget if it was a fracture or what, but like I think in late December, early January, he had an injury. And he's had some good games against the Colts over the past couple of years. I remember. I've been to Jacksonville for them. So.
Many Jacksonville players have had good games against the Colts.
That is also very much correct. So perhaps a wide receiver like a Tyler Boyd is out there, DJ Chark, Michael Gallup, and if you go beyond there, Hunter Renfrow, Michael Thomas, and the venerable Odell Beckham Jr. as well. Perhaps a one-year.
You don't be so much against a Ballard.
I know. I mentioned it only to say that would be not normal or not expected. But there are guys that are out there that are expecting to end up on some roster for next year. I mentioned earlier that mock drafts are maybe narrowing in, but if you look at who the Colts are taking, Chap, in mock drafts, I don't think anybody has a clear-cut idea of what's going to happen to 15.
Former receiver, pass rusher, Brock Bowers,
exactly.
Whatever.
Take your pick over there. Like, and people don't are not completely positive. You look at what you can do to help Anthony Richardson, then you take a receiver or a tight end.
I always default to that.
Exactly.
Help the quarterback.
Yeah, like that makes sense. But you know, cornerback has been a big need. That's a young room.
We've talked about that.
Talked about it already. Like, does Terry and Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell, the guy from Toledo, get there? But I listed a couple of them here. It seems like there's not a consensus, but a couple of different outlets had the Colts taking Quinyon Mitchell, the corner out of Toledo.
I was on a Zoom with Mel Kiper today, his latest, and he's got him going with Mitchell.
Yep. So ESPN, NFL Network, USA Today all listed Quinyon Mitchell there. Pro Football Focus had Brock Bowers. The Ringer had Terry Arnold.
He won't be there.
Yeah, I don't think so at 15.
If he's there at 15, don't you just...
He's one of those guys that you run to the podium, so to speak, which you don't do anymore. You call it in.
What he could do to this with this offense is really... But like Kiper said, he's there. He's his number 7th ranked player in the draft.
Yeah.
If you get him at 15, man, like you said, you don't take your 10 minutes or 15, what, 15, 10 minutes.
10 minutes now.
You don't take your time, you just call it in.
And I think the most likely outcome of all these mock drafts that I had was probably the last one, The Athletic, them trading down to 25 in the first round, from 15 down to 25. And I don't know if they would take wide receiver Keon Coleman out of Florida State, but I would, if I had to bet on trade down or not trade down, I just always will think that they're going to trade back and try to gather some more picks in here.
Yeah, that's, again, just I wouldn't trade back too far, because when you trade back, you're not getting as good a prospect.
Correct.
You just aren't. But again, with Kiper today, he had him going corner, and I said, well, in my mind, it's corner or receiver. I could argue strong with either one. And his idea, and from, you talk to other draft guys, it's such a deep receiver draft. And it's not quite as deep at corner. So get your corner, and then at 45, I think it is around mm-hmm. two, you're still going to get a pretty good receiver. And these guys, they take receivers in round two.
Yep, and it depends on the caliber of receiver that you see at 15, probably.
And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. It's proving true, which is crazy. The desperation teams are going to have to find their quarterbacks. These guys, all these draft guys, are almost agreeing that five quarterbacks are going to come off the board before 13.
That's the best possible news the Colts could get.
Take six.
Exactly.
Five to six. So, and again, the more that come down, you know, five quarterbacks, two receivers maybe, two or three offensive tackles, all of a sudden you've got a Brock Bowers type of guy falling to you.
Yep. So 1 month away. 1 month.
Amazing.
I know. It really is. OTAs begin before that, April 15th. We are just about 2.5 weeks away from seeing the Colts back here, although we won't see them too much. We'll talk with a couple of them, but we won't be back there because it starts with just strength and conditioning.
First 2 weeks, is that what it is?
Easy for me to say. Yes, it is. And you can go in there for work with trainers and all that stuff,
right,
too, if you need any rehab stuff going on. And then the draft, April 25th to the 27th in Detroit. And May 2nd, the next big date after that, so about a month and a half away, a month and a half away, will be the deadline to exercise fifth-year options on first-round picks from the 2021 draft, which would have been Kwity Paye for the Colts.
They know what they're doing.
They definitely know what they're doing with them for
next year. They're not going to come in May 1st and say, well, we got deadline for the Kwity. What are we going to do?
Oh, shoot. We got to make this decision. No.
They know what they're going to do.
Exactly. They just haven't told us yet.
Because they don't want us to know.
Yeah. So those are all things that are on our docket to talk about over the next couple weeks. Draft focused very much so for the next couple, I'm sure. And we'll continue to break down free agency moves as they come, leading up to and extending past this year's NFL draft. So for Mike Chappell, I'm Dave Griffiths. You can read all Mike's work online, fox59.com, cbs4indy.com. Follow him on Twitter, at mchappell51. I am @DaveG_sports, and we'll see you next week on the Colts Blue Zone podcast.